Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
8:36 Central Daylight Time, the first Sunday of Central Daylight Time, a harbinger of the spring to come. Temperatures warming later in the week, something to look forward to finally, and maybe we finally turned that corner. Last week, we heard about the increased demands from Democrats now in control of the United States House, looking for documents involving more than 80 individuals and organizations connected to President Donald Trump. The president says that these Democratic demands are what he calls presidential harassment.
Which hunt continues? The fact is that I guess we got 81 letters. There was no collusion. There was a hoax. There was no anything. And they want to do that instead of getting legislation passed. 81 people or organizations got letters. It's a disgrace. It's a disgrace to our country. I'm not surprised that it's happening. Basically, they've started the campaign. So the campaign begins. But the campaign's actually, their campaign's been going on for the last 2.5 years. So it's a shame. And the people understand it. When they look at it, they just say presidential harassment.
Joining me now on the phone is Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from Schaumburg and a member of the House Intelligence Committee. Congressman, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
Hey, Rick. Good morning.
Long time no talk. Appreciate you joining the show. You just heard the president's comments. Why should people think this just isn't presidential harassment?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I think that whenever you know, Congress conducts any oversight of the president, he calls it harassment. But you know, oversight is has been absent for the past 2 years, and I think one of the reasons why we got hired to be the majority in the House, I'm talking about the Democrats, is to conduct that oversight and serve as a check and balance on the president. That being said, we also have to deliver on pocketbook priorities for our constituents. And so, for instance, Oversight Committee, we're working on the issue of, you know, skyrocketing prescription drug prices. Next week, I'm chairman of a subcommittee of the Oversight Committee charged with economic and consumer policy. We're going to be investigating the link between talcum powder containing asbestos and cancers that have been caused in women who used it. So we have to walk and chew gum at the same time, Rick, on all these different issues.
Well, you know, obviously, the Congress is a co-equal branch of government, and people tend to forget that. But you, I believe, in a CNN interview, kind of likened what we hear involving the intricacies inside the Trump administration, the Trump campaign, Michael Cohen, kind of you likened it, I believe, to like a Sopranos script.
Yeah, I know. I think that, you know, Michael Cohen was just the latest in a long line of witnesses who've come forward to talk about how, unfortunately, the Trump organization and later even in the White House, things were run. And, you know, now, just as an example, you know, Special Counsel Mueller has indicted 34 people or entities, six of whom were close associates of the president. And we just saw Paul Manafort get sentenced to prison, the chairman of the president's campaign, a couple days ago. You know, there's a real problem when, you know, lying and criminality were a part of doing business in the Trump organization and then leading into the transition in the White House. And so we have to get to the bottom of whether, you know, there was any coordination between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And how do we prevent the Russians from interfering in our democracy going forward? And that applies to all of our foreign adversaries, too.
Well, in the Manafort sentencing, the judge in Virginia, sentencing on tax fraud related issues, basically said, well, you know, there was no collusion here, and kind of seemed to have taken a veiled shot at Robert Mueller and his investigation, which the fact of the judge even professing that there was no collusion was something that the president was, you know, waving like a banner.
Well, I just have two observations on that. One is the judge actually did not say that there was no collusion in the entire investigation conducted by Special Counsel Mueller. In that particular proceeding, Paul Manafort was not charged with a conspiracy or collusion crime.
Right.
And so to say that there was no collusion crime committed by Paul Manafort in that particular proceeding is kind of obvious because he wasn't charged with it directly. The second observation I have is that in the related proceeding that's happening in the District of Columbia Federal Court next week, he's going to be sentenced again. That's a much more serious proceeding, in my opinion, because there we've already learned through a document that was inadvertently filed by the special counsel and released to the public that Paul Manafort actually did meet with a business associate connected with the Russian spy services in a cigar bar, of all places, in New York City. This meeting is incredibly fascinating for the fact that the Russian-connected business associate asked for lifting of sanctions on Russia. And at that same meeting, Paul Manafort passed private polling data to that particular person. And as I said before, you don't have to be some brilliant political scientist to understand that when you pass private polling data to a foreign government, it could potentially be used to help facilitate or coordinate their influence campaign or their meddling in our democracy. So that was that's the one of the clearest examples of possible collusion in all of these proceedings.
Do you find it troubling that the president to this day still maintains that he's taking Vladimir Putin at his word and that Russia didn't interfere in the election?
Well, yes, absolutely. Russia clearly interfered in the election. The entire intelligence community, with one voice, has said that repeatedly. And by the way, that's why the head of the intelligence community, who happens to be a former Republican senator named Dan Coats, is under fire from the president right now. He may be let go precisely because he's been a truth teller on this. And the cozying up to Vladimir Putin, the repeated statements, including in that horrifying press conference last year where he stood next to Vladimir Putin and basically parroted his lines on foreign policy on various issues, really raises the question, you know, what was the connection between the two of them? We know that in 2016, there was something called the Trump Tower Moscow that they were actively negotiating, the Trump Organization and President Trump, with Russians, while at the same time he's denying in the Republican primaries as well as in the general election that he had nothing to do with Russia. And so this concealment and these falsehoods really raise a lot of questions.
Well, I think your colleague Mike Quigley has said that to him, that's kind of a chief concern is what really occurred in these negotiations over the proposed Trump Tower Moscow, and to what extent did that provide a way for some co-opting of the alleged co-opting of the Trump campaign.
Well, that's right, and Mike is correct to be concerned. Because remember, Michael Cohen, the reason why in part he's going to prison is because he lied about the negotiations between the Russians and the Trump campaign over this tower. And now we learned in the oversight hearing that he says that the White House knew that he had testified falsely about it. Why all this lying about this particular issue? And why did they decide that they were going to have a official conclusion point that would end before the Iowa caucuses in January 2016, when the negotiations actually went through June, and then Rudy Giuliani says it may have gone all the way to the election? This is a big problem because it, there's a political issue, obviously, when the president conceals that and says the opposite to the American people repeatedly all the way up to the election. And then there's potential legal problems, including the fact that there's an allegation that as part of these negotiations, the Trump Organization offered to give a $30 million penthouse to Putin, which is obviously in violation of all of our laws with regard to corruption and so forth, and something called the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. So these are the types of questions that come up. Just to put this in larger context, Rick, we know the Russians meddled in our democracy, and any statement to the contrary flies in the face of what the intelligence community says. And then the second part is it's illegal to agree to receive foreign help. Okay, you cannot receive foreign help because that obviously violates all of our campaign finance laws, all of our principles about Americans deciding their elections, not foreign actors. And so if there's any kind of agreement to receive that help or to facilitate or coordinate that help, that is a problem.
We're speaking with Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy from Schaumburg, a member of the House Intelligence Committee and the House Oversight Committee. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to your Sunday Spin. I'm Rick Pearson of the Chicago Tribune. 8:49 Central Daylight Time here in Chicago. I'm in the Allstate Skyline studio overlooking the Chicago River, and joining me on the phone is Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, Democrat from Schaumburg. We've been talking about some of the oversight and intelligence committee activities that he's been involved in. But I want to switch gears for a moment, if you don't mind, Congressman. And
sure.
I want to talk to you about H.R. 1, the, quote, For the People Act, unquote, which was kind of a big statement that I think Democrats wanted to make, and obviously by virtue of the number, House Resolution 1, a statement about voting rights. And if you could maybe just summarize that a little bit, and let's face it, you know, it's not going anywhere. You pass the House, but that's Mitch McConnell's already put a brick on it.
Yeah, unfortunately so. So I think one thing that most people can agree with is that our campaign finance system is really messed up, Rick. And I think one of the reasons why some of the priorities in Washington, D.C. don't match or align with what, you know, folks like my constituents and others feel should be our national priorities is because of the influence of money. And, you know, for instance, everybody knows at this point who's been paying attention that Citizens United unleashed a torrent of unlimited dark money into the system. And that has really hurt Americans. Just as an example, you know, climate change is something that I think the majority of Americans at this point want to deal with. And maybe we disagree about exactly how, but there's been absolutely no action on this issue, in part because the Koch brothers have flooded the system with money to oppose it. Same thing on of combating gun violence. Again, the majority of Americans, for instance, want background checks, universal background checks. And this measure has gone nowhere in previous Congresses because the NRA and others have again flooded the system with money and you know, basically done everything to curtail any movement. So H.R. 1 tries to do a few things, tries to reduce the influence of that big money and bring sunshine and transparency to it. It starts to reward smaller donations or people that are relying on smaller dollar donations as opposed to the bigger ones. It also, for instance, includes my own bill, which passed the House, to encourage students to vote. Students rarely vote in the numbers that they should because oftentimes they go off to college far away from home and don't know the registration requirements in their new locales. And so my bill called the Help Students Vote Act, which was co-sponsored by Cory Booker, the senator from New Jersey, basically requires that colleges and universities inform their students by email 90 days before the filing deadlines to get them registered, and then has campus vote coordinators to answer questions about it, and then it rewards those higher education institutions that do a good job of all of these activities. So these are the types of provisions were included in H.R. 1. It passed the House. But as you said, I think Mitch McConnell in the Senate doesn't want to take it up, and that's really too bad. I think this is something we should run on for 2020.
Well, you talked about the issue of dark money groups, and you know, I believe this would require the disclosure of names of donors who give more than $10,000 to these dark money groups. And Citizens United, I mean, going back to that, that decision which basically ruled that money is speech, decision by the Supreme Court, and it kind of, in many respects, kind of upended a lot of views that, you know, even if you didn't support limits on campaign spending, you could support the immediate disclosure, you know, in exchange, then just disclose, transparency, right. Disclose. And then with Citizens United, and you had kind of this corrupting of the federal tax code that allows these tax-exempt organizations who are supposed to be, largely supposed to be education or social, correct, or social welfare, and who are playing predominantly a game of politics and political, right, influences. And there's, once again, no requirement of disclosure of who the donors are to these,
yeah,
groups.
Yeah, look, if we can just drill down on that point for one moment, two issues come up there. One, and you're talking about those types of entities that are actually charitable entities that participate in quote-unquote educational activities on campaigns. What ends up happening is that they very directly get involved in the politics of those campaigns, and those contributions are tax deductible, and they are shrouded in secrecy. Now, the reason why this has also come up, by the way, recently, is that we know that some foreign actors are seeking to influence our campaigns, and they're starting to potentially funnel money into the campaigns through these charitable entities that you know, basically bring dark money to the table. Just as an aside, the Presidential Inaugural Committee is now under a spotlight because, in part, there's a concern that Ukrainian entities, Middle Eastern entities, potentially Russian entities, donated money through sham corporations and others into the Presidential Inaugural Committee, again, to influence public policy here in the United States. So this is all just completely unacceptable to me.
And it only becomes more Byzantine as things continue on. Democratic Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy from Schaumburg, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Absolutely, Rick. Have a great day.
You too.